Well, this morning I'd just like to consider some words of exhortation that we've been looking at as we've been doing the Numbers reading. And particularly just starting in at Numbers 33. It's a bit of a dry bone sort of chapter, but there are some interesting points that come out of it when we just do a little bit of digging and compare it with some other scriptures. And Numbers 33 details the journeys of the nation of Israel out of Egypt, through the wilderness into Sinai, and then from Sinai for those 38 years before they came to the border of the Promised Land. It's another one of those chronologies that perhaps in your family, you're very tempted like us to skip it, you know, and just, ooh, that's got a lot of names in there, let's move on. But there are some encouragements in here, and I'd just like to look at that this morning. The first thing to note, and Brother John raised this in the seminars last Sunday, the first thing to note is the time frames involved. And I'll just lead you to the aspect that from verse 3 to 11, we're not going to read that, but verse 3 to 11 covers just 1 month. Likewise, from verse 37, from Kadesh there in verse 37 through to verse 49, covers a period of around just 6 months. Verse 38 fixes for us a time period there at the very end of the verse. Aaron the high priest went up to Mount Hor, and there in the 40th year after the children of Israel were come out of the land of Egypt, he dies in the first day of the fifth month. So essentially what scriptures are telling us is now 6-7 months before they enter the promised land. In verse 16, we know by going back into scriptures that they removed from the desert of Sinai and pitched at Kibroth Hattaavah. And that was in the second month, in the second year. So 2 years, 2 months after leaving Egypt, they now leave Sinai. And of course they kept Passover before they left. Verse 17, when Israel leave Hazeroth there, at the very end of the verse, they come, according to Numbers 12:16, we won't look at, the wilderness of Paran. And from there we know that the spies are sent out. This is Kadesh. So the spies are sent out now in verse 17 to spy out the land. And of course that's a major turning point for the people of Israel, because by and large the nation rejects the faithful report of Joshua and Caleb and instead believe that the 10 spies report of the walled land, the people there are giants, in a sense, we can't do this. And so they wander for 38 more years in the wilderness. And so begins this period of some 37, 38 years of wandering, described from verse 19 right through to verse 36. We know very little, as John mentioned last Sunday, we know very little of this time period. And if you've got a margin in your Bibles, you'll notice there's some big blank spots there, because we're just not told. There's no references to speak of these places they went to or what happened there. And it's perhaps significant to note, John looked at it last week, that we considered how Israel complained and murmured pretty much from day one, didn't they? And when we come, as we will shortly, to look at the last period of Israel's wanderings, again, there's murmuring and complaining. And I just wonder for those other 37 odd years whether there was any difference. We're not told of it, but why would there be a difference between those two periods? So we learn of the real patience of Moses, don't we? His bearing with the people all that time, and perhaps hundreds and hundreds of occasions where Israel would have murmured and complained for lack of water, for lack of food, the journey's too long, we need to go back to Egypt. You know, we know the story. So from verse 36, as I mentioned, begins a period of the 40th year. So the 40th year since leaving Egypt. 1 year from then, Israel will cross over the Jordan and enter the promised land. And the 40th year begins with the death of Miriam. We don't learn that here, but that's back in Numbers 20, I think it is. And she dies at her age, probably 125. She was a few years older than Aaron, and again, older than Moses. The period is described in chapter 20, and I'd just like you to come back there, and we'll look at some of the details for our exhortation this morning. It's a period of sadness. It's a period of trouble for Israel. And as I say, so close to the land, and yet so far in their behaviour and in their attitude. So verse 1, chapter 20, then came the children of Israel, even the whole congregation, to the desert of Zin in the first month, and the people abode in Kadesh, and Miriam died there and was buried there. And the trouble begins here. The trouble begins. And if you like, this period of 37 years is bookended, isn't it? It's Kadesh to Kadesh. In Kadesh, they failed to enter the land through lack of faith. And in Kadesh now, after the death of Miriam, they're going to complain and they're going to moan in verse 2. There was no water for the congregation. They gathered themselves together against Moses and against Aaron. And the people chode with Moses and spoke, saying, "Would God we had died when our brethren died before the Lord." And perhaps you're referring now back to the same period 37 years ago when a number of the children of Israel died when they went to invade the land and failed. "Why have you brought up the congregation of the Lord into this wilderness that we and our cattle should die there?" And unfortunately, Moses is really drawn into this strife now, such that we know that it is here that Moses fails significantly and God excludes him from ever entering the promised land with Israel at this time. So Moses is told by God, he says, "I want you now," God says, to take the rod in verse 8. "And gather the assembly together, you and Aaron your brother, and speak to the rock before their eyes." And Moses has already done this, hasn't he, a number of years ago, 37 odd years ago, 38 years ago, in Rephidim, when he'd struck the rock and water had come out. And it seems to me that the water was such that it was enough to feed a whole nation and the animals. A real spring of water, a real flow. God says here, however, "I want you to speak to the rock, and it shall give forth its water, and you shall bring forth to them water out of the rock, so thou shalt give the congregation and their beast drink." And where does Moses get the rod from? It's verse 8, "Take the rod." It's not just any rod, it's the rod. And you'll notice verse 9 that Moses took the rod from before the Lord as he commanded him. So it's not just any rod, it's the rod that we know had been used to define who was the tribe that God had chosen to be the priestly nation. This is the rod that sprung forth blossoms and buds and fruit and leaves, the new wood, everything about it. This dry old stick that had been Aaron's had now brought forth. And there it was, laid up before the Lord, and God says, "I want you to go and get that rod." And so you can imagine Moses coming out with this rod, a fully fruited branch. And verse 10 is the mistake, isn't it? "Moses and Aaron gathered the congregation together before the rock and said unto them, 'Hear now, you rebels.'" And they were rebels, weren't they? There's no doubt about that. "Must we fetch you water out of this rock?" And Moses lifted up his rod and he struck that rock twice. And the water came out, as we know, in the cattle. And everyone had water to drink. And so Moses, in his hand, had smashed the symbol, the sign of God's choice before the nation. He hadn't spoken to the rock. He'd spoken in contempt to the people, "You rebels." And in anger, he smashes this rod with fruit and leaves and blossoms and bud on it. And so the almond rod, this rod that had been restored to life by God's miracle, a sign that God had chosen specifically Levi to be the priestly tribe to serve before him, and also very much so that Aaron was to be the priest. And so Moses, in a sense, broke that symbol and smashed it. We notice from our Numbers 33 reading that Aaron died fifth month of that same year. So some 4 months later, in verse 25 of this same chapter, chapter 20, the command is to take Aaron and Eleazar, his son, and bring them up into Mount Hor. And Aaron is to be stripped of his garments and to be put on his son Eleazar. And Aaron shall be gathered to his people and shall die there. And so it's a very somber occasion. Of course, there's no ceremony attached by taking a man's clothes off him and putting it on another man, is there? There's no fanfare with that. It's a very somber occasion, and Aaron dies. Two brothers, Moses and Aaron, go up Mount Hor with Eleazar, and Moses comes down with the new high priest, and Aaron dies and is buried on Mount Hor, we assume. And so it's another sad occasion that Miriam dies, the people complain, Moses is excluded from the land, Aaron is excluded, Aaron now loses his life, and Eleazar is a new priest. And I just want to just briefly go through now just what happens in the next 7 months. I don't expect you to retain it. I just want to impress upon you just the activity that now happens from here on. And I've just listed them out. I might have missed one or two, but these are the main ones. After this, the Canaanite king of Arad is destroyed by the nation of Israel. There's Israel's revolt again over this this manna, this light bread that we loathe, and of course is the subsequent fiery serpents bite the congregation, and Moses sets up Nehushtan, he sets up the brazen serpent on the pole. King Sihon of Ammon is destroyed. King Og of Bashan is destroyed as Israel moves closer to the land. There's the incident of the Baal Peor in the plains of Moab. There's the census, the second census. There's the five Midianite kings destroyed along with Balaam, who incited the Baal of Peor. There's the retelling of the law. This is Deuteronomy in the 11th month. And the death of Moses. And, of course, Moses dies at the end of the Deuteronomy account. All that in 7 months. So we're told very little of 37-odd years. In the last 7 months, all this happens as you work through the book of Numbers. We know so little of this vast period in the wilderness, but so much about the very end. So let's just go across to Numbers 21 and verse 4. Remembering 6-7 months out from the promised land, the nation journeys from Mount Hor, where Aaron has just died, by way of the Red Sea to compass the land of Edom. And the soul of the people was much discouraged because of the way. And we learn here that they leave Mount Hor after mourning for Moses, for Aaron, for 30 days, and they're much discouraged by the journey. And as I've mentioned before, it may have been particularly the very rough terrain that was in that area, really tough going. It may have been the pain and the sorrows. They see all the oldies, if you like, all the men of war's generation is dropping dead as they're now near the border of the land. And imagine perhaps digging thousands of graves each day or hundreds of graves each day for your relatives and friends and neighbours as the previous generation die off according to God's promise. But however, because of the way that the people are much discouraged, complaining is again on their lips. Verse 5 of chapter 21, the people spoke against God and against Moses. Wherefore have you brought us up out of Egypt to die in the wilderness? There is no bread, there's nothing, neither is there any water, and our soul hates this light bread. So there's real contempt here, isn't there? And you'll notice in verse 5 they complain not just to Moses' time but to God himself. And he sends the fiery serpents. Verse 6. The Lord sent fiery serpents among the people and they bit the people and much people of Israel died. Much people. And if only they just considered that in just 7 months, and God had given them the timetable, in just 7 months they would cross the Jordan to the promised land. And perhaps this would have put things into perspective for them. Would they have complained so if they had known how close they were to entering this promised land of rest, this land of milk and honey? Just 7 months, that's all it would be. And you'll be there. Don't worry about the manna anymore. The light bread, the stuff you despise, because you'll eat the good of the land. But no, it didn't work like that. And of course, we need to ask ourselves, don't we? Because yes, it's speaking about Israel, but it's also speaking about human nature. It's about ourselves, isn't it? These people are like us. We're like them. And the problems of trials of our lives, of your lives, 6-7 months ago, things that have been so pressing, so urgent, so distracting, how is it now in perspective, you know? That's the point we can ask. Six or seven months ago for us, just a very short period of time, but of course as you go through problems, it's not that easy. Not that easy to look forward to. And so God in his timetable brought Israel through that last 7 months. And you'll notice that as we just scan through Numbers 33 that there were just as many stops, encampments. I think there was about 8 that I counted, possibly more when you go through some of the other Numbers chapters, but they were continually pulling camp up and you know, really only stayed in the place for a few weeks and they're away again. And in between all that you've got the conquest of Sihon and Og. So God's timetable of activity seems to speed up greatly as the time of promise draws near. And perhaps we can see parallels with our own lives. The timetable of activity seems to speed up rather than to slow down. And so as Numbers 33 does, it shows us a chronology of where the nation had been in this journey. And going back, as we've seen, we've looked at some of the details associated with places they went to. And of course, looking back in our own lives, what is it and where is it that God has led us? What have we learned? What was the reason for those difficult places that we were taken to? Why was there times of shortage? And of course, you can fill in the gaps here about what the shortage is in your life. The shortage for Israel was water and food that they liked, or even food sometimes. That was their shortage, and God always supplied. But they just had to have that faith. We have to have that faith that God is there and he won't leave us short in that sense. Out of all these things that have come upon us, do they bring us closer to God? Do they help us to identify perhaps a little bit better with our brothers and sisters? Those that travel with us, do we understand some of the hardships that they are facing or they have faced? For Israel, it brought complaining, it brought groaning, and ultimately for the generation of the men of war, it brought their death. They didn't see that promised land. So certainly, these are hard questions. They're certainly personal questions. And I don't think Scripture asks us to keep going back and looking at our lives and going through our history and looking at the bad times, but to look forward to that promised land, to understand that Israel, with a mighty hand, had been delivered from Egypt. Israel were to tell their sons at Passover time, they were to tell their sons, this that we are doing here is because of what the Lord did for me when I came out of Egypt. So don't worry about the plagues. What we're doing now Passover time, this is done because of what the Lord did for me when I came up out of Egypt. And that was the lesson of Passover. And so likewise for ourselves, as we take the bread and wine, this is done for me to remember Jesus and Jesus' work for you and for I. We could bookend, if you like, the journeys of the nation of Israel as Kadesh to Kadesh. You know, the failure to go into the land and the death of Miriam. You know, that's the two ends of their history in that sense. But we don't have to, of course, because we can have the other bookend, which is Passover to Passover. And that was the other aspect of their journeys. They kept Passover as they left Sinai, and they kept Passover as they entered the land. So these are things that we are called to remember. So Jesus, of course, had a dedication and a commitment to overcome sin. He showed love in allowing wicked men to nail him to the cross. And of course also he's shown us much encouragement. And just to finish, I'd like to quote from John 16, verse 33. Jesus says, "In me you have peace. In the world you shall have tribulation, but be of good cheer, for I have overcome the world."